This fall, get back in the game with EverPlay Sports and Social League, Columbia's home for fun, fitness, and friends. We've got leagues firing up all over town starting September 7th. Flushball softball at T.S. Martin Park, pickleball at Casey Pickleball Complex, turf soccer at Recreation Arena, indoor volleyball at Tri-City Leisure Center, bowling at Lucky Strikes, sand volleyball at Pollywogs, soccer at B Avenue and Bray Park, cornhole at Jay's Corner, hardball softball at Pacific Park, and kickball at M Avenue and B Avenue, including our same team pitch option. Kick it all off at the Fall Kickoff Party, Thursday, September 4th from 6 to 8 p.m. at Jay's Corner. We're giving away a ton of random raffles, and it's the perfect chance to meet your teammates before the season starts. Register by August 21st to dodge the late fees and score some limited edition Fall League shirts. Hit everplaysocial.com to lock in your spot. EverPlay Sports and Social, play hard, party harder. Hey everybody, Barrett from the All About Nothing podcast. Look, one of the things we love to do is shout out small businesses doing cool things. And ZJZ Designs is one of them. They make these awesome seasonal and themed t-shirts, and they're not just eye-catching, they're high quality. I've ordered a few, and they've held up in the wash after wash. Plus, it feels good knowing I'm supporting a creative shop, not just feeding the Amazon machine. So if you want something fresh, funny, and made with a little extra heart, hit up ZJZDesigns.com. You'll definitely find something there to love. ZJZDesigns.com. Check them out. All right. Good morning, everybody. This is the All About Nothing podcast kind of daily show. I am Barrett Gruber, host of the All About Nothing podcast with Zach King. You can find me on social media at Barrett Gruber. This is Bill Kimmler, host of Black, White, and Blue in the South with Dr. Jamil Brooks. You can follow him at Political Bill SC. Reporting on a Tuesday morning, it's July 29th.
So can you do that without reading copy? Have you gotten to a point where you can close your eyes and just rattle it off?
I potentially can.
Oh, I think that's Thursday activity. I want to see you try.
All right. Thursday. What I'll do is I'll hold it towards the screen.
Okay.
So that I can't see it, because of course it's backwards on mine. So it's July 29th, and it just occurred to me. I don't know. We're on like what, our 25th of these, 20 something.
I don't know.
We've done.
Good question. I mean, if you do it twice a week. And we've done it for half a year. We may be in the 50s.
Yeah, that's true. There's a very simple way for me to look at it, because I save all of the audio files from it that I publish. So, but yeah, July 29th, in my head, I keep thinking, all right, you know, we've got what, 4 more months of summer, because summer doesn't end until November.
In my mind, I don't hit 40 for a couple more years. So our minds are really teasing us.
I look forward to cooler mornings when I get up and I go down there to the rowing machine, or I go out and walk, and I don't come back as the sweatiest version of myself. And this isn't sweat on my shirt this
morning. Good Lord, what time do you get up? I'm rolling out of bed and barely making it to the microphone in time for this, but you've already got a full workout routine under your belt.
This morning was about 3:45 to get on the rowing machine for about half an hour till about 4:15.
So are you in bed by 6 p.m.? I mean, how does this work?
Shoot. No, it was 9:45 last night.
Wow.
I don't know how I function on the amount of sleep I get, because I think, you know, like sometimes around lunch, I'll think to myself, maybe I'm making you yawn.
Sorry, not you. It's just talking about getting up early.
Yeah.
Triggering.
Sometimes around lunch, I'll put my feet up and I'll take a little nap and whatnot. So I'll get like a little hour, but that's about it.
I might do that during the show.
That's probably fair. Well, do you want to talk about Trump's poll numbers?
Well, before we do that, let's talk about the latest episode of Politically Speaking. Right?
Yeah.
So I had a chance to listen to the ladies, and they're heading into almost their 10th episode. So they're getting some experience under their belt. But this last one that just dropped was fascinating, getting to hear a half-hour discussion where they ranked the hunks of political presidential candidates. They actually sat down and discussed for a good 30 minutes who's hotter, Andy Beshear or Gavin Newsom or Wes Moore or Pete Buttigieg or even John Ossoff. Like they sat there and they ranked the hunks of the Democratic Party. And I'm wondering, do we get to do the same with the babes of the Democratic Party?
I feel like...
Or is that out of bounds? Yeah, that's not allowed.
No, I feel like we could do it. I I probably feel like I think we can do it. I don't want to participate in it just because be like, but no kink shaming, please.
I just found it, you know, riveting political discourse. And I'm thinking, wow, that's this is what I tuned in for. But you know what? I make fun because being lighthearted here, but they're just talking like normal people talk. I mean, I remember 4 years ago when Joe Cunningham ran for governor of South Carolina. And he was out there in social media posting shirtless pics of him at the beach, you know, all wet and dripping, coming out of the water, slow motion, like something out of Baywatch. And I remember my stepdaughter, who was a late high school, you know, maybe senior, freshman in college, something like that, was like, ooh, I like him. I'm voting for him. Right. I mean, that's how superficial Americans can be as voters. So there's got to be something to that.
You're not wrong. No, that their conversation about the because it started off right at the top, pretty much. Well, it started off right at the top, being on the rails, talking about their, you know, visiting or I guess Kirsten being able to meet Gavin Newsom or be in the same room as Gavin Newsom, and yeah, then it quickly went downhill towards
like who has a better profile versus looking at them directly. You know, I was like, wow, they're getting really detailed here.
It was because I produce that show, I sit to the side and I hear all of it. And then when I go back and listen to the episode, I hear the parts that I missed because I'm not actively listening to it. I'm listening for like microphone cutoffs and potentially like, you know, cause like that'll happen. They're recording from three different locations and they are. So someone's internet may drop, like Kirsten's dropped at one point. I don't know if you heard in the episode because I listened very little to the actual produced episode, but Emily's got a dog in her office with her.
Lock that dog up already. Come on.
But she also had an RF buzzer that she would keep right here. And she's got this microphone. She's using earbud microphones that have a little microphone right here, and it's an RF signal, and she's zapping the dog trying to keep it quiet. So I don't know if you hear it coming over the I went and listened. I didn't hear
any buzzing.
But during the recording, like, we had to pause because what we heard was every time she'd start talking and she'd be hitting, she's just zapping that dog. All you hear is, and I in my head I'm imagining this dog is just seizuring, but it's not. It doesn't electrocute it. It just does a little vibration to try and distract it. But yeah, that was and I told Emily, I said so, because at the end of the episode when we figured out what the noise was and what was going on, I said, did you and your husband have a bet and you just lost? And he was like, for this episode you got to have that dog in there with you, and it's gonna bark the whole time, it's gonna scratch at the door, you know. No, it was an interesting episode to listen to while I was recording.
So you produced that episode, and I bet you're also running their social media accounts right now too, right? They're not doing their own.
On their Facebook.
Yeah.
I will get on and do their Facebook. Their Instagram, Erica takes care of, because she'll go in and she'll pull out shorts that she'll eventually publish.
Okay, I was going to say, because we're getting likes from Politically Speaking Facebook account, and I know there's no way any of them are checking out our Facebook account, which also led me to think, is I've got off to the side a running list of accounts I think you're responsible for. And you've got quite a few and quite a few that are absolutely unrelated to any of the podcasts that you do. You've got some old dusty accounts you whip out just so you can like some stuff.
That is not wrong. Midlands Paranormal.
That's one. Don't you also have an account for like a volleyball net? Right. Yeah, I know. Who has a volleyball net for as an account? That's wild. But yeah, you've got some dusty ones you crank out.
I used to play a lot of volleyball, like two or three times a week. We were out there playing sand volleyball, but I injured my shoulder, and now I can't raise this arm higher than this. I can push it. That's painful though.
Oh, speaking of arms, can I share something with you? Are you good at interpreting dreams?
I can give it my best shot. Okay. Let's go.
So I had two nights ago, probably one of the most disturbing dreams I've had in ages. And I'm a vivid dreamer. I remember just about every dream I have when I wake up.
Let me write this down.
Okay.
Yeah.
This one you're not going to need to write down. You're going to remember this one. So I dreamt in this dream, I had only one arm. Like, that's the premise that the dream started with. It. My right arm was missing from some accident in the past, and I couldn't remember what. But I was just walking around town with just one arm. And then I lost my left arm at an amusement park. In some sort of accident, the amusement park. Now, it wasn't painful. It just kind of fell off. And then the rest of the dream, like 3 hours worth of dream throughout the night, was me as an armless individual walking around. Now, I'm joking about it. I'm trying, you know, when I deal with tragedy or pain or illness or whatever, I tend to compensate using humor. That's just my reaction. And so I'm joking about being armless and kind of being witty and positive. But then I was quickly finding things like I can't open the door, you know, and like now I'm realizing the consequences of being an armless individual. I was like, I can't unlock my phone because my fingerprint, you know, I have no finger, let alone how am I holding the phone to begin with. That part, you know, the logic didn't match up there, but I just found myself struggling to unlock my phone because of the fingerprint. And so, and I woke up and it was one of those so hyper realistic dreams that it took me a while to realize I did have my arms and that it was all a dream and whew, you know, I'm laying in bed. But I just sat up going, where the hell did that come from? I wasn't watching any videos about armless individuals or legless individuals or about any type of Spartan games or any of these things. I have no idea what that was.
Well, as far as an interpretation of the dream, arms, just from things I've read or I've seen online, arms are generally they're associated with like strength.
Not my noodle arms. There you go.
Did you say noble or nimble?
Noodle.
Noodle arms. Okay, fair enough.
Like a wet spaghetti string, man.
It's a feeling of helplessness or being overwhelmed. Maybe potentially a sense of loss. You know, you did just give away your daughter. I know she's lived away from home for a while, but you did just give her away. So maybe that's something. Ami has enlightened us. Dreaming about losing your arms can symbolize feeling of loss or control, power, or the ability to walk life. Walking life, you can also represent feelings of helplessness, lack of emotional connection. Or, and she went on, difficulty achieving goals. The specific meaning can be influenced by context of the dream and personal experiences.
So it sounds like this is a common dream then, you know, one of those, hey, I went to school without pants on type of dreams that everybody has. I never heard of this. It sounded rather unique.
She pulled that from AI.
AI knows everything.
It knows a lot about what it's been fed. That we'll just say that. AI knows a lot.
What do you think about this latest trend of people getting sucked into AI? Almost into a cult-like religious figure, you know, where they feel like that they're gaining deep secrets or unveiling mysteries of the universe and reality by asking ChatGPT certain prompts, and they get completely sucked into it.
It's uncomfortable. I mean, I think that it definitely gives a sense of just how. So for me, it's two different things. It's how weak-minded some people are, but it's also how desperate they are for some to grab a hold of something that they can attach themselves to. It's uncomfortable for me to see how their individualism is attached to the what it is that they are feeding into a machine, and then the machine is regurgitating out to them. I see people that do that. I see people, or I know, I see people post things online of things that they, like, my father's one of them. Like, he will send me snippets of conversation that he's had with the Meta AI, where he says, ask me questions about myself. And then it'll go into this whole thing where it asks him questions and he's answering them. And he's just unloading. Sometimes reading his responses is just a lot of bullshit. But at the same time, he's giving it very personal information. And I'm of the mindset, I'm a little uncomfortable about that.
I mean, you can see how it happens. You look back throughout the millennia and you've got organized religions that use large sacred texts as the foundation of their wisdom. So you've got, you know, the Bible or the Torah or the Quran, and, you know, thousands of pages plus ancillary writings, and almost everything in your life can be teased out of those books one way or the other. And people will just completely buy into it. Well, then you take something like large language models and ChatGPT, which are built on the entirety of the human written language. Every book, every Wikipedia page, every article, every video, they're just constantly consuming human output. And now I've got a tome that has billions, if not trillions, of pages at its disposal. And so you ask it anything, it's going to spit out something. And you can almost see, well, if there's any chance of being able to tease something out of the entirety of the collection of human knowledge, it's going to be this technology. So maybe there's something there, but it can be very consuming.
I think I am always of the mindset that regulation is not necessarily a bad thing. If regulation and moderation is not a bad thing. AI being what feels like almost completely unregulated right now, as far as like what it has access to.
Well, speaking about having access to, I think the parent company of ChatGPT is a company called Anthropic. If I'm not mixing up the technologies, but I think Anthropic produced ChatGPT. And now they're being sued by book authors, publishers worldwide for illegal utilization of copyrighted works, which is if they lose this case, it would end their business. It would end their business.
Sure.
And then I would think consequentially end all the other AI models out there. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes.
How do you shut down something that is in some cases already free roaming on the internet? I mean, like, I know that.
Well,
like,
they shut down Napster, to kind of go back to our decades ago. And yet it proliferated and, you know, just found 100 other avenues. Yeah. But they certainly can shut companies down.
That's true. No, I'm not afraid of AI. I use it pretty consistently. You can probably see in my posts, like I will use AI to create social media posts for the podcasts, just because.
What do you mean by you use it to create social media posts? What do you need the AI for to do that? Well, I'm curious. I was like, how do you use it?
And then I'll just copy and paste that in there. I'll look over and be like, oh, I do remember that.
Using it to do a quick one paragraph summary of an entire episode, and that becomes your social media post.
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't know if you were doing AI generated images or clips or things like that.
So this new t-shirt is an AI generated. I AI generated it and then did some extra stuff to it. Of course I added.
What part of the AI generation is there? Like, that's something I'd whip up in Canva in less than 30 seconds.
Sure. Jesus was AI created.
So give me a picture of Jesus with sunglasses on looking cool, right? That would be the prompt.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Okay.
Pretty much. And it creates it for me, and then I use it in a t-shirt design.
I've used AI. I'm starting to use ChatGPT more and more to answer questions. You know, like, instead of Google searching something, I will look up, you know, hey, how do you... Like, for example, I'm sitting out on my porch and we've got a couple of geckos in our yard, and one of these little colorful lizards keeps running across the porch back and forth. And so I got curious, can I train and domesticate these things? Could I get one to feed out of my hand? I was just curious because I've done it with squirrels. I've had squirrels eat out of my hand before. Once they get used to humans, you can train them. I was like, could I do this with a little gecko here? And Googling was hard to find, but I just posted the question in the ChatGPT and it came up with the answer, like a full essay on, no, you can't, but if you were to try, you know, here's how you might go about it. But it came with links, you know, where it would, you know, here are the notes and the references, and you can go read some more. Pulled it all together in seconds and it was exactly what I needed. So I'm using ChatGPT more and more for that. As far as generating content, I have used ChatGPT for image creation. Now, for the free model, you're limited to how many images a day you can create. But one part of my life that we really don't talk about is my Stephen King fandom and journey that I go on. And every day, I am reading or listening or consuming something involving Stephen King works. It's just a journey I've been on since 2021 now. So I'm in my third, fourth year going on it. And every day, haven't missed a day, except when I went under surgery that one time. But aside from that, every day. And as I'm reading a book, and I'm live blogging what I'm reading, you know, just random thoughts, you know, hey, this is a fun passage. I don't care if anybody reads it or not. I'm kind of doing this as I'm actively reading Stephen King's works.
I didn't even know you were live blogging
it. Well, I'll have to share the link with you. Yeah, there's an account out there. I've got a whole other persona called Stephen King Journey. And it's got a website. I've got a couple social media accounts. But anyhow, I'm using AI to create some images of what pops into my head as I'm reading a text. And so I will feed it the text, or I'll feed it some prompts and see what image it can create. And some of it's photorealistic, some of it's artistic or cartoonish. And then I'll include that photo along with the little mini blog post to go along with that text to add some imagery to it. So it's been fun to try to do some image creation.
Okay. Yeah, no. Send me that link. I'll put it in the show notes.
It doesn't need to go in the show notes. I'm not trying to even get followers out of this thing. This is just kind of my side hobby. I'll tell you where it came from. When I turned 50, it was like midlife crisis time. And the way I looked at it was either I get a sports car or I relive an experience from my childhood that was very defining. And for me, it was Stephen King. Like from the time I was sixth grade all the way through college and then even some beyond, I read every one of his books, saw all the movies, the biggest fan in the world. And so I said, all right, now that I'm turned 50, I'm going to go and revisit every one of his novels and consume it from beginning to end, from the first book to the last book. So I've been on this journey every day, kind of working through it. But it's not just the books, it's every movie, every TV series, every podcast. You know, just all the complete immersion into every story. So I've got a big old plan worked out, and it should take me to about 2035 to complete it based on this timeline.
Fingers crossed I hit my midlife crisis about 10 years ago.
What did you do?
That's my hope. Had kids.
That's certainly a way
to... Just hoping that's the midlife part. That if I get past 60 or 70, I'm going to be disappointed. I don't see much point in going much further than that. That would be my preference. Yeah, real quick though, I do want to mention, so Trump's poll numbers according to Gallup, and Gallup's usually been semi-friendly with Trump. They've always tended to keep him a little bit higher as far as the poll numbers go when in respect to what other polls are potentially showing. They dropped him to 37% yesterday.
Doesn't matter.
Well, it's sort of.
He may not get reelected as president because his poll numbers are so low. Come on.
What I recognize, though, is that an unpopular president like Donald Trump at 37%, of course, Republicans still always hold strong. You know, they're always going to stay attached to him. He went from 91% on Inauguration Day to 89% yesterday. Democrats went from 6%, which I'm curious after the inauguration at 6%, which Democrats were like, yes, out of 100 Democrats, six of them were like, nope, this guy's going to do a good job. That's at 2% now. So there's still two out there out of 100. But independence of where it's really dropped off. He's at 29% with independence. And I cannot in my head seeing a situation where independents are going to vote for Republicans that have attached themselves to Donald Trump. I think if we have elections in 2026, I think that it's going to be very good for non-Republican representatives. I think the potential is that as long as the Democrats go out there and actually do the work to get the votes, to get voters to turn out, I think that we could see that pendulum swing back a lot quicker than 2028. I also saw that we now have, I don't remember the names, but in the South Carolina governor's race, there's how many different Republicans now running?
There's four who have announced now. And Nancy Mace is teasing her announcement any day now. So that would be number five. And then we've got six of, I think, are Republican announcements for running for U.S. Senator to take on Lindsey Graham.
Right.
I mean, you got the guy who created Project 2025 has now thrown his hat into the ring. I don't even know his name, which is a problem.
It's not important.
Right. I mean, he should just go on the ballot as Project 2025, first, last name, right. and then watch him get elected.
Yeah, but Nancy Mace, of course, congressman out of the District 1. You got the guy up in the Rock Hill area. I can't for the life of me. I can't
Ralph Norman? His name until
somebody. Norman.
Yeah. The congressman.
Norman. Two congressmen so far from South Carolina that are looking to give up their seats to run for governor. And I think, you know, that should ultimately that should be an opening for Democrats in both those seats, because you've got Charlotte suburb areas of the Rock Hill area. I know that they are deeply red, but I think the possibility of taking that away. And then you've got the Charleston Low Country area, which is could potentially, if voters turn out, if the Republicans are disenfranchised with who it is that's running for any of these campaigns, there it's not a presidential campaign, so automatically it's got lower turnout. You've got extremely unpopular, uninteresting, boring Republican governor candidates running as of now. So it just, it's adding up towards as long as it is a free and fair election. And
I'm, so on the Democratic side, how many nominees have announced for governor?
None.
One.
Not officially announced.
One has announced.
Jermaine Johnson, I thought
was. He has not announced. He's still exploratory, no. But there has been one Democratic nominee for governor.
You say Vincent Shaheen or Dick.
To be honest with you, I don't even remember his name, but he's a lawyer out of Charleston.
Okay.
Comes from a politically connected family. I'll have to look this up and send you that link. But he is known because he recently was arrested for running naked down the street. Just in his underpants, he had a mental breakdown. And was found running along the harbor there in Charleston, buck naked, screaming insanities. And he was locked up, had to have some treatments. But now he's back in his suit and tie. And I think just last week formally announced that he's still pursuing his candidacy for governor. He's got a website and everything. I wish somebody could pop his name into the chat, but he is the only one that has officially announced as a Democratic candidate for governor.
I want to say I feel lucky that should be entertaining. You know, mental.
Can't you Google that real quick? Important. Just saying, governor candidate ran naked, South Carolina. That should pop up his name right away.
Let's see. Searching the web. Who has officially announced that they're running for Democratic candidate, South Carolina, for governor? It's not giving me anything. Let me.
That wasn't the prompt I gave you. Listen, you're a terrible ChatGPT. You don't follow any instructions.
No, usually I feed it into ChatGPT, and it absolutely has to like give it some serious thought. Jermaine Johnson is, let's see, two top GOP candidates. No, I searched candidate for SC Democratic governor nomination. Ralph, I don't see anybody. So,
all right, I'll ping it to you later.
Yeah.
Okay. It was just in Fitz News a couple of days back. It wasn't very recent.
I got to train ChatGPT to start using Fitz News. But I think it used Fitz News a couple of times. And I think that Mullins, McLeod.
Yes, that's it. McLeod. That's exactly who it is. You got it perfectly. Mullins, McLeod. That's the name. I won't forget it again.
Ami is a professional Googler.
Yes.
There is.
I think I'm going to switch over and do this daily show with Ami. She seems to be the most knowledgeable one. Among us all, she knows about dream interpretation. She can get the proper governor candidate. But yeah, Mullins McLeod, you know, was buck naked running down the street.
Just to acknowledge, I was saying about arms and strength before her prompt popped in there.
Yeah, but hers was more coherent. I mean, come on.
Well, I was trying to be topical and conversational. Hey, I did want to bring this up. And this is something I think that one of the things that Democrats absolutely should be pouncing on is, so in the protests in Los Angeles, a number of those protesters got arrested by ICE and federal charges were brought against them, including like aggravated assault against ICE officers and things like that. LA protesters, the Department of Justice has dropped all of the charges against most of the protesters because it was found that after their arrests and their charges were moved over to the Department of Justice, that the ICE officers had actually made up. They had reported false statements about the protesters because there was so much video evidence. There were so many witnesses that made statements against what the ICE officers had had. That like 99% of any of the charges in Los Angeles against protesters have all been dropped because these people that have been being hired as ICE officers, some of them have no police law enforcement background. Some of them have never been in the military. I mean, like, these are people that are just being hired that are potentially just, all they have to do is say they're loyal to Donald Trump. Like, I have not seen the actual application, but that's what some of this is starting to infer, is that there isn't actually any experience required to become an ICE officer. All you have to do is say that your loyalty is to Donald Trump and you can get this job, but there's no training. That they're basically,
basically you're recruiting the schoolyard bullies and turning them into a military unit.
Exactly. And this is proof that clearly this situation isn't working. You know, I'm absolutely in favor of strong borders. I absolutely in favor of having a system in place that people can come to the United States and become citizens or find a path to citizenship that is much better than this.
So I'll end on one question. It were headlines in the newspaper recently that the largest fentanyl bust in South Carolina history occurred last week. And they got in a truck, like pounds of fentanyl. I mean, it was just a massive haul. And they suspected that it came across the southern border from Mexico. It was processed in Mexico and crossed the border into the United States, which made me think, I thought the border was closed. I thought Trump shut it down because of the fentanyl crossing through the country, all legally, free open borders. So how is it that we're now having the largest bust in South Carolina history because fentanyl was able to make it across the border under his watch?
And make it across, what, five,
six and we're states? Talking recently, too. We're not talking about, like, this was fentanyl from 3 years ago. This was in the last month. What happened?
Right. And how does it get into the state of South Carolina with Alec Murdoch and his family no longer being the traffickers that are bringing it in?
Ooh. And that sounds libelous. I dismiss that statement. I dissociate from it. I have nothing to do with it. Lawyers have at them.
I'm gonna pull a Tucker Carlson. I'm just asking questions. That's all I'm doing.
That's right. A little question mark at the end of a statement protects you legally from everything.
Isn't that how that works? All right. Well, no, I agree. I questioned the same thing. How did it get all the way to South Carolina through the border if Donald Trump is out there saying right now that the border's closed, that there are zero illegal crossings occurring, that there are no drugs coming into the United States under his watch, and yet South Carolina is now reporting. When Alan Wilson releases a statement about that from his office, does he look at that and go, well, how does this contradict Donald Trump's message? Like, how does this make Donald Trump look like he's wrong? And I don't think anybody's proofreading this stuff. I think that they're just excited about the fact that they get to announce that there was a big fentanyl bust.
I just wonder if I'm the only one who thinks of this. I mean, it's...
No, I thought of it too.
Yeah.
I question, you know, how is it that we're reporting, how is it that this happens when Donald Trump says the border's closed? But like, I'm not the person to ask. The person to ask is someone who voted for Donald Trump because they knew he was going to shut down the border.
That's a good point. Like, why do I ask you anything? I should be asking people actually know shit. That's a very good way to end the show. It's a very good point. Now I'm disappointed in me.
That's going to wrap it up. Big thanks for tuning in. Don't forget, you can follow me at Barrett Groover and Bill at Political Bill SC. You can catch us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 5:30 a.m. Eastern, because we like doing this and we hope you like us doing it. You feel better, Bill?
Not really. Oh, I feel like I've been disarmed.
All right. Well, until next time, stay safe, be kind, keep your hands yourself, and may every day be another wonderful secret.
The preceding podcast is a product of Big Media, LLC, and is copyright 2025, all rights reserved. Get ready, Columbia. Soda City Comic Con 2025 is turning up the heat this summer. It all goes down August 23rd and 24th at the Columbia Metropolitan Convention Center, and the guest lineup is already packed with fan favorites. Let's start with Katie Sackhoff.
Yeah.
Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica and Bo-Katan Kreese from The Mandalorian and Clone Wars. She's a sci-fi icon and one of the coolest people to ever wield a blaster. Then there's John Heder, the man, the myth, the Napoleon Dynamite. From Blades of Glory to Surf's Up and everything awkwardly hilarious in between, he's bringing the signature charm to Soda City. And rounding it out, we've got Caitlin Robrock, the incredible voice of Minnie Mouse in Mickey Mouse Funhouse, Minnie's Bowtie Tunes, and many more. She's also voiced characters in Agrisuko, Amphibia, and Mr. Pickles, a true animation powerhouse. They'll all be there, signing autographs, taking selfies, and meeting fans all weekend long. And this is just the beginning. Even more celebrity guests are being announced. So keep checking SodaCityComicCon.com. BarrettBlackCompany.com for the latest updates, guest lists, ticket info, and VIP perks. Make your summer unforgettable. Grab those tickets and come celebrate all things pop culture at Soda City Comic Con.